Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Jonathan Smith, Oregon State football coach, will join us later in the show to tell us, who is the Oregon State kid? Who's that kid anymore? Is it a lunch bucket kid? Jonathan Smith will be with us. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian covers the Oregon Ducks. He's here to speak to the Oregon Ducks National Signing Day. Greif, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What's going on in your world? What have you been doing today?
Well, I spoke with Mario Cristobal yesterday on the eve of signing day. Today was kind of tracking the class as it came in, and I'm writing a story that just went up on OregonLive.com about not so much even this class, but all the changes that Cristobal has been trying to implement since he took over in the 2 months as head coach to kind of push Oregon forward, 2019, 2020, things that he thinks will push Oregon forward down the road. So I know that this class, is kind of a disappointment in some ways because of not a particularly strong close, but he is saying that down the road, the way they're going to be evaluating prospects differently, he thinks that will be a big change.
This was a program that had the number one ranked recruiting class, just months ago. And then Willie Taggart leaves, and then they get their big weekend wiped out by the Vegas Bowl. And by the way, they got their teeth kicked in there. Is his head spinning?
I think it's starting to slow down a little bit, but he basically said that there's really been no stop since December 5th when Willie left, because obviously he then interviewed for the job. So I think that he's been through this before, and I had said, does it get any easier recruiting, the run-up to signing day? Did the early signing window, which took care of 15 players, did that make this, next 6 weeks between then and this February signing window, does that make things any less hectic? And he said, oh, no, it never does. Even yesterday, he said that he hadn't looked away from his phone for more than 30 seconds, basically in 2 months. So I think that the head spinning is kind of part of the job, but this was especially wild for Oregon.
Where do they end up, do you think, after the dust settles today? Are they a top 15? Are they a top 10? Are they a top 20 program recruiting-wise?
Top 15 seems to be the consensus of where they'll end up. I think they're still going to be in the mix and likely to land an offensive lineman out of Utah, whose name I cannot pronounce. Sewell. But he's probably the last one on the board for Oregon. Don't believe he's said anything yet. So it's going to be, I think, higher than top 20.
We're talking to Andrew Greif of the Oregonian. He covers the Oregon Ducks. I've been asking this question for the last half hour, but who is the Oregon kid now under Mario Cristobal versus maybe Mike Bellotti or Chip Kelly or Mark Helfrich or Willie Taggart?
Well, it kind of depends on the position. Inside the trenches, he wants kind of to play bully ball. He wants to have maulers, big guys, not the kind of zone blocking, for lack of a better word, the things you always heard about Oregon, these finesse offensive linemen. He wants someone who's 350 pounds, like Justin Johnson, the guy out of Philadelphia who just signed today. That's his type of trench guy. On the edges, he still wants the speed, just like all the previous coaches you mentioned. But something he said that was interesting today was that what they're going to be doing going forward is really, I think this kind of is probably similar to how Helfrich approached it than Taggart, is he's going to be looking a little bit closer on backgrounds, background checks. He said something that's going to be a much bigger deal under him than certainly last year. And And by that, he said they're looking at practice attendance, school attendance, grades improvement, durability. How often do you get hurt? You know, they're going to be asking coaches about what's this kid like when something doesn't go his way? How do they respond to that? And he thinks that that's going to be, you know, a big change. I mean, everybody is assessing the recruits in their own way. But he said just like the off-season weight program, basically what they want to do is take how Alabama recruited and import it to Oregon. And that includes doing one more big change, which is having four coaches talk to one recruit at all times. You have your head coach, your coordinator, your area coach in charge of the geographic region, and then your position coach. And then one recruit will basically have four people always in contact. Under Taggart, Chris Ball said it was at max two. And I think you saw that, like Trayshawn Harrison today out of Seattle, he's for Florida State. He decommitted in December. Willie was one of his only points of contact with the staff. So when Willie left, all of a sudden they're playing serious catch-up. This is the form of insurance just in case anybody else leaves, you know, whether it's this year or next December.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian talking to us about the Oregon Ducks. He covers the Ducks, and you've just posted about 15 minutes ago a story on the Ducks and sort of the prognosis for this this offseason. He mentions in the piece, Mario Cristobal mentions the offseason program. It's not sexy to talk offseason. Like, everybody wants to talk about the season, but what does he mean by the offseason program needed improvement?
It's both recruiting and the weight room. And his vision of the weight room is modeled just off of Alabama's. I wrote a story about a month ago about how they wanted to basically have a West Coast clone of how the Crimson Tide approached the weight room. And the vibe I get, he didn't say this, but the vibe I get is that they want to be more functional with the way they do strength training, whereas before it was a lot of kind of some of like maybe more of like the, you know, the bench press still can be part of it, but maybe some of like more beachy lifts, you know, like the stuff that you kind of see on a poster. He wants guys to have everything, every lift focused on how would this play out on a football field. And he said, that's how Alabama did it. That's where we're going to do it. With the recruiting, again, it goes back to Alabama. He hasn't signed a recruiting director yet, but I'm sure that whoever he brings on will have some kind of familiarity with how things were done with the Crimson Tide, because that's what is a lot of the inspiration Chris Ball is pulling from.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian with us. I thought when Willie Taggart left the program that there would be some hangover and some discussion about Willie. Of course, that lasted into the Vegas Bowl.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby.
Then,
another ball game.
Then it picks up with recruiting. Does National Signing Day close the door on us really talking about Willie and the effect he had on Oregon?
Yep, I think so. I think it should, because, you know, this was the hangover, you know, the Trayshawn Harrisons of the world who were once committed to Oregon, who flipped to Florida State, you know, Malcolm Lamars, Warren Thompson, those guys who all once were coming to Eugene, look like, and now are going to Tallahassee. That's, I think, the last direct influence you'll see of Willie over Oregon. There are always going to be contrasts, though, of how Oregon does things under Cristobal that will always be kind of referred back to about how did Willie do them? But I think for the most part, this is probably the last time we will really be talking about Willie in a lot of ways.
All right, Greif, everybody's declaring victory today. Oregon, Oregon State, Utah, USC. When you look across the Pac-12, where's the buzz on National Signing Day?
Well, I mean, USC and Washington had some nice late movement. I know, you know, Washington picks someone from USC. Pick some kids from Oregon. I think that's usually where the buzz is. And USC just always seems to be closing fast. And I know that the buzz really isn't around Oregon right now, but I would remind people that this is still, if it does end up being a top 15 class, the top class in Oregon history was number 11 in 2011. So this is not that far off. It's about four spots higher in some recruiting rankings than last year's class, despite more hurdles to it. So I think in perspective, it's still pretty good. Although when you have the dreams of number one as recently as, you know, October, November, I can obviously tell why it would be disappointing. But it's going to be really curious to see, I think, what Oregon does in 2019. That's what I really want to know. This is kind of a weird crapshoot recruiting period where there's all these things in Oregon's way. What do they do when they have no excuses and have a full year to do it? I think that'll be a huge measuring stick for Cristobal and his staff.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian. Thanks, Greif.
Thank you.
Read him online, OregonLive.com. Up next, I'm going to talk about expectations for Mario Cristobal. What should we be expecting next season? How many wins? What's the bottom line? No excuses, right? Plus, coming up later, we'll look around the Pac-12 conference. Did Chip Kelly make a mark today? And Jonathan Smith, the Oregon State head coach, will join us. Leave it here. See what Elon Musk is up to? Gliss, what'd you think of that?
That was awesome. That's all I can say. It was awesome. The best part was watching the two boosters that came back down and landed on the landing pads. That was unbelievable.
That was mind-blowing. And look, like billionaires do these things. Like they get bored, they do projects, they go in search of polar bears and they buy submarines and stuff, but Elon Musk is doing some stuff. His idea was to send a Tesla into space, and he did this with his Falcon Heavy rocket launch. And then he launched a Tesla Roadster into space. And then, as Gliss pointed out, the boosters, which detached during the rocket launch, came back to Earth and landed, like, simultaneously. Like, this was high-tech outer space stuff, like from a movie. This isn't like the normal NASA rocket launch. And you think that that was the most impressive part, those rockets coming back? I was blown away by that. I almost fell off the sofa when I watched it. But I think what is even more brilliant was, I get why he put the Roadster out there. Number one, there's marketing for Tesla. Everybody's looking at a Tesla thinking, how cool is that, that Tesla's in space? I didn't know you could do that. Number two, see what he did here is he took science. We've all seen the NASA rocket launch. We've all seen it over and over and over again. Oh, cool. And then we turn the channel. He took it and he made it like a tangible, real human thing. Because even though, like, the rocket launch, you see it over and over. You know, rocket launch. Oh, cool. But you have the made on Earth by humans printed on the circuit board, and don't panic on the dashboard, and a spacesuit wearing dummy sitting in the car, and David Bowie blasting on the speakers. It was science with this human touch to it. It made me like him even more. And I gotta say, I think we were early adopters on this show. We tried to get him on like a year ago, did we not? Was he busy or something? Elon, you tried, or what's the deal here?
We can try to get him on the show.
Oh, you think he's going to be free now?
Yeah, why not? He wants to talk about his Tesla in space.
Get him on the show.
I think we'd have greater success getting Willie Taggart on to come talk about the Vegas Bowl. Just think.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby.
You know? By the way, Droz, you saw some video of Taggart today.
Yeah, they popped him up on ESPN2 a minute ago. They kind of went to the recruiting room for Florida State there, and he had the big spear, and all the lights were off. You couldn't really tell what was going on. The only light coming in was from the hallway, so it's just a bunch of people kind of celebrating, but all you see is just people moving around.
Yeah, I got to give Willie Taggart credit. It's a lot of sizzle. I'm not sure there's steak there. It's to be determined if Willie Taggart can flat coach or not. We know he can recruit. We know that there's sizzle. We know that he can row the boat, as PJ Fleck does. We know that he gets airtime. We know that he does a really good job, or whoever who's running his social media accounts do a good job with it. A lot of sizzle for Taggart. I don't know if he can coach. And I don't know next season if he's going to win more games than Mario Cristobal. Because I think Oregon's schedule kind of lines up nicely for Cristobal, especially with Herbert coming back. And I think Oregon will be much more locked in year number one under Mario Cristobal than maybe Florida State under Willie Taggart. I think Willie, ultimately, we're going to find out if he can coach or not. And I think Willie, it was a big risk, I think, for Willie Taggart to go to Florida State at this point of his career. Forget the money. It was a risk for him because if it doesn't work out, he's going back to South Florida or somewhere like that. And I think he could have stayed at Oregon and used it as a springboard to somewhere like Florida State, or maybe even better. Maybe Florida State was his dream job. I don't know. I didn't get to know Willie that well in his time here. But the Elon Musk thing is interesting to me because it's got undertones of the same type of showmanship and salesmanship that Willie Taggart had. See, I get that it's going to be cool to knock on Willie.
We're excited about the Vegas Bowl, baby.
But the big thing with Willie Taggart was he did bring excitement and enthusiasm, and he could recruit, and that number one recruiting class was all what he was about, and he's going to recruit very well. But I don't know that it necessarily translates into Willie Taggart winning a national championship unless he surrounds himself with great coaches. Elon Musk is saying, look, we're going to go to space and beyond, and SpaceX is going to be attention-grabbing, and it's going to be about substance. And it's going to be about, this is a game changer yesterday. He had to prove it. And on any other day, a choreographed twin rocket landing after a launch would have been the main event. But then the car showed up. I didn't think it was real. I thought when I saw the car, I was like, oh, is that CBS News just putting a car up there? And they were like, no, that car is actually in space. I was like, that is this one on top. That's the cherry on the sundae. So I'm looking at Cristobal, and I'm wondering if Cristobal has enough sizzle. And I'm looking at Taggart, and I'm going, I wonder if he has enough substance. And to me, it made sense that tandem stayed together. I'm not saying it would have been the Beatles, but I think it would have done much better than Mark Helfrich did. I think they would have been sniffing around a national championship, sniffing around a conference championship next season and beyond. I don't know if Oregon... I'm going to say something the Duck fans might be uncomfortable with, but I think in your heart of hearts, you know this. I don't know if Oregon realizes that the window to win a championship, at least in this era, I think it closed on them. Let me say that again. I think going to a national championship game against Auburn and going to a national championship game against Ohio State and not winning either game, I think we're going to look back on this in 5 or 10 years, and we're going to say Oregon had its shot, and that window closed. Can Mario Cristobal reopen another window 3, 4, 5 years from now? To be determined. But I think the window closed on Oregon, and I think a lot of Duck fans know it, or even if they're afraid to say it, they know it. You got there, you didn't win it. You were like the Buffalo Bills. You got there, you didn't win it. You know, you had your shot. And you just couldn't do it. And you lost. And there's no shame in losing to Cam Newton in Auburn. There's no shame in losing to Ohio State. It was, hey, you stuck your nose in there. But that window, because Chip Kelly leaves, because Mark Helfrich doesn't have the wherewithal to recruit a quarterback and pull the Velcro corners of this program back together, it got sloppy. They didn't develop a quarterback. They were relying upon Verdon Adams and whoever else they could grab in there at quarterback. Oh, we found Justin Herbert almost as an afterthought, and it wasn't enough. And even if Helfrich had stayed, it was a 8-win program, 9-win program in its best years, and a 5 or 6 or 7-win program in its lean years. And I don't think that was good enough anymore for the Oregon fan. I think the window closed on Oregon. And I think there's no shame in that. I'm not trying to be mean here. That there was an opportunity there to have recruiting classes that were perennially formidable that also went in conjunction with results on the field. Those programs weren't getting, you know, knocked out of a Vegas Bowl or knocked out of an Alamo Bowl. Those programs were playing for the national championship in the first ever college football playoff. And in the BCS against Cam Newton and Auburn and the Heisman Trophy winner and all that. And I think if Oregon is not going to get real with itself and go, look, we had a shot and that window closed. Now what do as we redirect? You've got to use it as a pivot point. You think the Patriots are sitting around today going, you know what? Damn, that window closed on us. Oh, well, see you in 5 years. They're not. They're going, how do we pivot? Who's expendable on this roster? What coaches who have left us, who do we replace them with? What's going on with Josh McDaniels? What do we do on the defensive side of the ball? The Patriots, because they're a great organization, will pivot. They'll pivot the way the Spurs did when Tim Duncan retired. The Spurs will pivot. They'll pivot if Kawhi Leonard leaves. It's what great organizations do. They don't get mired in looking at themselves in the mirror and saying, we've got to make a hire that sustains the next 2 or 3 years as the window starts to close. And that's what Oregon did with Mark Helfrich and promoting Mark Helfrich after Chip Kelly. Continuity. I'm not saying it was the wrong move, but that's what they chose. They chose continuity over going, let's find the next visionary. Because Chip Kelly was a visionary coach at that time. Now Kelly's back in the league. He's not on your side. And you've got USC making a lot of noise today on National Signing Day. We'll talk about that coming up in the next hour. And I think if you're Oregon, you got to acknowledge, look, our shot ended. It closed. We've got to pivot now. Cristobal, you're the guy. What do you need? Because that Oregon kid that was flashy and into uniforms and all that, it isn't about that kid anymore. It's got to be about Mario Cristobal and the kind of kids he's recruiting. Leave it here. You're listening to the Bald Faced Truth and the BFT Radio Network. Punch It Audio's in front of us. You're listening on 102.9 at 7:50 The Game in Portland.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.